Something is trying to get inside my body,
and you want to sleep with me.
We can't go to camp without our physicals now, can we?
La plume de ma tante.
I take great relish in savoring each separate horror. I roll them over on my tongue.
Don't, Lord Byron. Don't remind me of it tonight.
Sometimes I have wondered whether life wouldn't be much more amusing if we were all devils.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Yes, I've always dreamed of a little girl just like you.
Welcome to Hungover Queens.
Three out of four of us are really hungover tonight, so I'm Jonathan Larkin.
I'm Jonathan Butler, not hungover.
He's not hungover.
And the horribly hungover Martin Fennessy.
I'm Stephen Moore, I'm not quite sure I'm alive.
Stephen spent most of today trying not to vomit, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get those notes off to St. John's Ambulance when he had to pick you up?
No, I'm just dating someone who works in St. John's.
Stephen's
just robbing notepads.
Stephen has a wonderful St. John's Ambulance notepad for his notes.
What, is he a paramedic?
Yeah, he does part-time paramedics, but mainly he's high up in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
He's the person you sue. If you sue him, if you sue the hospital, he gets sued directly.
Oh, right.
It's very official.
Oh, that's interesting. Cool. So, yeah, a few of us went out last night. I feel really shady that we all went out without Jonathan Butler, but it wasn't like that. We were going out separately, and then I didn't even know you were going to be there.
Neither did I. I didn't know it was on, and then I like stumbled in.
Found himself there.
Stephen just checked in on Facebook at the same club night that me and Martin were going to. So, yeah, and we all ended up doing the Time Warp, didn't we, guys?
We did.
Mm-hmm.
Sonic Youth, that is a Liverpool club night. It's like gay, queer, alternative club night. And it's like 80s, 90s and beyond type music.
And the first Halloween party?
And it was a Halloween, yeah. It was
Scalloween.
Scalloween. so we had a fine old time, but we have managed to squeeze in some viewing as well. Thanks for all the love for our Jello podcasts. Seem to be the most popular at the moment, which I'm surprised by, pleasantly surprised by. And funny enough, the next film on our list is a Jello as well. So we decided to go 80s style and look at Dario Argento's 1982 Jello slasher movie, Tenebrae.
I've read all your books, Mr. Neal. The book deals with a murder committed with an old-fashioned open razor, right? This girl, too, was killed with a razor, and your book's pages stuffed into her mouth.
Can I ask you something? If someone is killed with a Smith & Wesson revolver, do you go and interview the president of Smith & Wesson?
Peter, you can't let me down now. We're within 2 days of making a deal. Please, stay just until Friday.
My life is in danger. There's no deal in the world worth risking my life for.
Not anxiety or fear, but freedom. You wrote those words, page 46. Freedom to strike again, Peter.
Listen, don't hang up. We have to talk.
You told me how, Peter Neal. You and me together. We've just begun.
Does anyone know what Tenebrae means?
It's a Catholic service. Water service, I think. I don't really get what it is. It just came up when I Googled the film.
Right,
so like I've got some sort of Latin.
Yeah.
You should know, Martin. You're a big Catholic.
I know, but I'm not from the time when there was a Latin mass. despite the rumours that I'm 362 years old. I'm not really.
The three mothers is made to Tenebrarum, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Was it Mother of Sighs, Mother of Tears, Mother of Darkness? Mother of Darkness, maybe? Maybe it means darkness.
Maybe.
No.
We could just Google it now.
Yeah, we could Google it.
But we're not going to.
No. We'll just make something up.
Tenebrae. So Tenebrae is about a crime writer. He writes Jallo books, really, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Called Peter Neal. And he goes to Rome to do like a book tour, promotional book tour. And while he's there, lots of murders start to occur. Grisly murders, usually women with not many clothes on, horribly murdered.
and there are links to him and his book, and he's being stalked by someone who's giving him funny phone calls and sending him threatening notes. So, yeah, it came off the back of Inferno, didn't it, this one? So we had Suspiria, Inferno, and then Tenebrae.
Yeah.
I think he just wanted to get away from the whole witches, mother of tears, supernatural stuff, and decided to go back to his giallo roots. But I think he was aiming this film more at a slasher movie audience, with it being 1982.
Yeah, I think the golden age of giallo was pretty much up by 82, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so the body count's really high in this film.
Mm.
There's lots of gore, and it's mainly women who get it in the neck, literally.
I thoroughly enjoyed this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this was really, really good film to watch.
Yeah.
And it's got everything that you want out of a giallo, the classic black gloves, the breathy stalking, strange voices on the phone, everything about it is just classically giallo. It's a bit meta. With its idea of the writer like kind of knowing he's doing it, but then experiencing it at the same time, and then it's a reflection of Dario Argento's work itself. So it's quite an interesting kind of... Because when I was watching with my partner, and he turned around and said, this film is really sexist, and I was like, I don't think it actually is sexist. I think it's deliberately trying to be sexist to prove a point. Like, it's kind of... It was on the edge, and that was quite an interesting edge to take to it.
I think it is done on purpose. There's a really good line. It says, it's the detective at the start when he gets to the first murder and says, I should have got myself a tough male assistant who can run fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, but I think that's Argento kind of, he'd taken all the criticism over the years of he was a misogynist. And it's done very, it's very knowing. You know, even the actor in the film who says it is like...
It's a bit of a wave to the camera.
Yeah, they're in on a joke. Like, and I think that's Argento's way of saying, you've said I'm misogynist, so I'll put this little line in for you.
Yeah.
And it's very classic slasher. And going into sexism with the fact that everyone who gets killed is sexually promiscuous straight off the bat to all of the women.
Yeah.
You do something sexually promiscuous and then dead.
Yeah.
And it's a focus on that every time.
I think it's really interesting because the first victim, so it opens with like a girl, doesn't it, who's she's the mother of, she's the mother of tears.
Mm.
She's one of the mothers, isn't she, in Inferno, you know, the girl stroking the pussycat.
Oh, yeah.
It's her, she plays the shoplifter. And I thought that was really interesting because, first of all, she sort of, I just find it really bizarre. Maybe I'm just judgmental, but to see this like beautiful young girl shoplifting like a novel, going straight up thinking that's just not going to happen.
It's also odd because she was in like the underwear section, and there's just a rack of thrillers in the sock aisle. And it's like, is this an Italian thing? I need some socks. And I'll get a new thriller. I don't know what I mean.
Yeah, and then she tries to seduce her way out of trouble. And then when she leaves,
she doesn't try. She just says, "Here's my address. Come along later, and I'll make it up to you."
Well, I think.
And the police officer says, "Are okay?"
Yeah.
But what I thought was really interesting was when she leaves and she's walking home, in quick succession, in less than a minute, there's an old woman who judges it from her window.
Yeah,
just looks the way she looks at her, and I hate the way she's dressed, and like shuts the curtains, and is disgusted by this like whore that's walking past the window. And then instantly, a second later, some old man tries to sexually assault her. And this happens to this girl just on the way home. It's just crazy.
What he actually says was, "I'll give you my address. You're not gay, are you?"
Elsa Manny, 12 convictions for shoplifting. You should have learned by now.
Okay, listen. We can make a deal. It was just a paper bag, for Christ's sake. I'll give you my address. For later, I mean. Anytime. Come on, give me a break. You're not gay, are you?
Where do you live?
Here, in Rome. Number 14, Via della Camene.
Via... Tele Kamene. Okay.
Thanks.
The script, I did think the script was a hoot.
Yeah.
It's so, some of the lines, and it's so funny.
Because it comes after all of them, he's got the whole body of all the giallos to look at. And
yeah.
So he's having fun with it, basically,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it is.
And it shows.
Yeah, I loved a bit where so Peter Neal comes to Rome, and he's getting interviewed, isn't he, by different journalists, and one of the journalists says, "Tenebrae is a sexist novel. Why do you hate women so much?"
She was a terrible actress, that woman. That she was doing my head in the entire time she was on screen. I mean, I liked her lines and like the way she was, but oh, that girl could not act.
She was just so antagonistic, wasn't she? I mean, blunt. It was antagonistic.
Yeah.
But she was just so blunt and forthright. It's like, how do you expect as a journalist to get any answer out of him when you...
Doesn't she know him as well? Isn't the story of this,
I would say about a month. Then the actual writing. Actual writing about 3 months.
Hi,
Tilda. Yeah, 2 months for revisions, rewrites, proofs. So, with 3 books in a row, it means I haven't stopped for almost 2 years now.
Tenebrae is a sexist novel. Why do you despise women so much?
Sexist? No, I don't think it's sexist.
Women as victims, ciphers, the male heroes with their hairy macho bullshit. How can you say it isn't?
Tilda, what's the matter with you? You've known me for 10 years, ever since you studied in New York. You know very well that I...
Look, I'm talking about your work.
Well, I don't know. Would you like me to tell you that I supported the Equal Rights Amendment?
Okay, so then explain the books. Do you write to a fixed pattern? Or do your publishers tell you this kind of sexism sells copies?
Well, that is the same press conference where he sees John Saxon's hat and he likes it.
Yes.
That's like, what the... Yeah. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah. So John Saxon's in this film. He's one of my daddy crushes, so I really enjoy him being in this film. And it's so funny. I've got the Alan Jones Argento book, and I was reading, and he interviews John Saxon in the book, and John Saxon can't remember making this film. It's just like completely blank from his mind. He says he wasn't in it.
He doesn't remember.
He doesn't remember being in it. Yeah, and then when Alan Jones tries to prompt him and says, "Don't you remember the death scene in the, you know, the open air piazza or whatever it is?" John Saxon assumed that was in another film. He remembers making that scene, but thought it was in something else. It's just really weird.
Especially if you make that many films, they're going to start blending into one.
Yeah, and he was quite busy in the '80s as well.
Yeah, if you get murdered in that many films, you probably blend into one.
Yeah, that's very true. So we have murders going on, but we keep getting these weird beach flashbacks that look like the Pet Shop Boys domino dancing video. and there's like a chick in red shoes, isn't there? And she's walking around and she's seducing all the
very
boys.
Sexy.
Yeah.
In a little pattern red stilettos that she forces down someone's throat.
Yeah. Isn't that first one, they're all like kids, aren't they? They only look young and they're like 14, 15.
Yeah.
It's like she's seducing these kids.
She's seducing
them. That's a bit creepy.
Isn't she on the beach? And but she refuses, she sort of rejects a certain one of the certain lads with me, and he gives her a slap, as you do. And then she sort of chases him down and sticks a stiletto heel in his mouth. So I thought it was funny because she's literally stomping all over his masculinity, which is such a big Jello trope, isn't it? You know, masculinity under threat. And what I did love about this as well was that none of the women wore any bras.
It is a very nipply film. I did make that note. It's very nipply.
Yeah, I think they'd been at the ice cubes before they started rolling.
It was very wet Roman weather, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was lots of rain.
That's a Argento staple, isn't it? He likes wet women.
Yeah.
Well, who likes a dry woman? One of the more famous scenes in the film is the tracking shot, isn't it?
Oh, it's
amazing. It's the two women, it's the lesbian couple, isn't it?
Yeah, because they start arguing downstairs, don't they? And then the camera pans out.
Yeah.
And tracks up.
A 4-minute musical video.
Yeah. The music he's listened to is the Tenebrae soundtrack. That's what a coincidence.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love films that do that, though, where they just suddenly, the incidental music is suddenly part of what they're listening to, and they just switch it off. There's an amazing, really bad movie with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton called Boom.
Mm.
Which is just, you've got to see it, it's so bad. And there's a bit in that where the incidental music's playing as Elizabeth Taylor swans around in a caftan, and she suddenly just claps her hands and it stops. She breaks down the fourth wall, just to turn the music off. It's amazing. But yeah, that scene is amazing.
Yeah.
I sort of wish we had more time with those characters, though.
Yeah, I really like the lesbian office. Yeah. Like, That one that comes to the top there.
One of them's a hooker, isn't it? And then the other one.
Yeah, the other one's disgusted that they're being a hooker.
Hey, he's cute. He's vulgar and cheap. I love you, Tilda, but no jealous scenes. You promised. Okay. Listen, he doesn't have a place, so I'm taking him back to ours.
Oh, Christ.
Hey, what's bugging you? I thought we agreed.
Okay, no ties, but you don't have to rub my face in it.
Not your face, honey. Not tonight.
And so they are hookers then? Because
I think one of them definitely is. She's already got one of her tits or is the outhouse.
Yeah, she just has that like one tit out. It's just at the top of the stairs and she's just like, I've drank too much. I think I'm going to throw up.
I
just, like,
yeah, I made the notes of how seductively she said, I'm going to throw up. Like she was like trying to turn us on with her vomit.
You cheap little hooker. I wouldn't come near you right now if my life depended on it. You make me sick.
I've drunk too much. I'm going to throw up.
If you have to, go some other place to do it.
I feel sick.
Go call your pimp to look after you.
All right. You want to know what happened? He was terrific. He made you look pathetic when we made love. For a start, he...
Oh, but obviously, yeah. She covers her tits up whenever she was completely on her own. But then, when she was coming down to be a cummy for something, she would expose her left breast or right breast. And it really, it was so bizarre.
Well, it says a lot about her personality. She likes to expose herself when the people are around.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I love that scene. And that when the Tenebrae theme is playing, it just makes you want to do the robot a little bit as well. That's such good music.
Because when she picks the needle up, doesn't it, and then the song stops.
Yeah. And those death scenes are amazing as well. They're sort of iconic in Jallo and Slasher history, aren't they?
Yeah, so she put a t-shirt on.
Oh, yeah, and she slashed through the t-shirt.
Yeah, it's good.
And then the girl who's the topless lesbian, whose head smashes through the window, and that became the cover art of the film.
I love how glam she's posed when she's dead and her hair's just like draping over the side.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's like, right, if I'm going to die, that's how I want to die. It's like, I want to look perfect in my hair, my weave, like, full length.
That whole apartment building is amazing, though, isn't it? It just looks incredible.
Is that the one that's really brutalist?
Yeah. You know, it's almost the thing that she dies. Her death pose is very, very well designed when she's in such a well designed building.
Yeah, she thought ahead with that one.
She did.
Let's face it.
Is this the one that as well where the girl, or I can't remember if it's this next one, but the girl hears that someone say, you filthy little pervert or something like that. Then she still proceeds to just continue getting undressed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think I'd probably go and investigate that or like do something and not just be like, okay, I'm just going to keep looking at
it. That's the creepy whisper, isn't it? Yeah.
Slag pervert. Filthy slag pervert. And she's not perturbed by that whatsoever.
She's just used to hearing it.
Maybe she's just used to hearing that from her neighbour.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So we get a bit of homophobia in this film as well, don't we? Because that's what the killer says his motive is for these two. He refers to Les Boss and calls him slimy pervert and stuff. So he's using homophobia as his reason to kill these two, but it's kind of, I mean, and from what I can read as well, it's on purpose that the motives for the film, for the murders in the film, aren't really that strong.
Yeah.
But it's kind of about that.
Yeah.
That's the point though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like senseless.
Yeah, he said the scariest thing about murders murdering for no reason, and that's what he wanted to focus on this one.
But it's the kind of cheap novel, you know, that's what he's going for, isn't he? He's copying the cheap deaths from his novel to kind of make it more horrible. Don't want to spoil the end, but we'll get to that later.
Well, I mean, so talking about the novel, I think one of the more interesting aspects of the script that I found was when he's being interviewed by Cristiano, the news anchorman, who's clearly bent as £2 knows himself. But when he's referring to the homosexual characters in his book and calling them deviants, and Peter Neal sort of leaps to the defence, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Just because they're gay, why does that make them deviants? And I thought that's quite interesting, you know, forward thinking for an Italian film made in 1982.
Yeah.
For the script to take that kind of tact.
I don't. There's like a lot of random stuff that happens in this film, like the homeless man that attacks that girl, and then there's Cujo. like the Avenger Cujo.
We discussed the talk. Yeah. I watched that because I'm
demented.
I'd seen this film before and I watched it this time with Martin, and I said to using Nyan Ben, when the dog, the bit with the dog, I said, what do you think's going to happen now? And you were both like, oh, you know, someone's going to come up behind, someone's going to kill it. And I was like, no, the dog is going to jump over two fences.
And it did.
It's all done in one shot as well, isn't it? That's a well-trained dog.
It's amazing.
It's crazy. I really don't get what was going on. That dog was just playing vicious. It chased her like four blocks, jumped over walls and everything, just to bite her. I think any dog would have just given up at that point. Like,
there was no point in the fence. I mean, if you owned that dog, you'd know. You'd know it keeps escaping.
Yeah. Anyway, it just backflips for fun, so it's going to escape. Yeah. Anytime.
Why does it happen? I just don't understand. Why?
I think it's just literally to chase her into the plot point, isn't it?
It's just to chase her into the literal plot point.
I love the fact that Dario Argento sat down and thought, right, I need to get this character into the killer's creepy basement. How can I do it? Doberman chase. I love that's his train of thought.
It's a classic layer, though. I do like the layer. And the pictures of everything.
The scrapbook.
Yeah. Every like serial killer has got a bit of time for a bit of arts and crafts, yeah.
They always like to have a wall of who I've murdered and this is who I intend to murder.
Keep it in a fold.
Yeah.
But actually it was really disorganized. I commented on that at the time. if he's that obsessed about how he's killing people and keeping an archive of everything, why is it all just piled on the desk in a random fashion?
But he did have, like, letters already cut out for the next time he was writing a note. So he was prepared.
Very well prepared.
Preparation is key.
His poison pen letters.
Yeah, that's true.
When the woman actually goes into the later, the thing that didn't get is why she stole all the pictures and the evidence and that to take with her.
Because she kind of knows Peter Neal, so if it's something that proves that it's not him, because isn't he kind of implicated straight away?
Yeah.
Because the first victim has got a page of tenor stuffed in the mouth.
I was thinking it was like, it just didn't make any sense. If I was in some of the evil area, I wouldn't be touching things. I'd just be getting out and making the police. All the evidence would be inadmissible anyway.
Yeah.
Because you touched it.
What makes less sense, I think it's fair enough for grabbing stuff to say, oh my God, this is what I've discovered, I need to tell somebody.
Yeah.
But it's when she's getting chased later on and then she decides to take it all out of her pockets and ineffectually throw it at the murderer.
Here's some paper.
Here's some paper, you're not going to murder me. Here's your evidence. That really hurt. That paper cut will really hurt you and stop you slashing me.
Wasn't it a death by paper cut, has there?
I think it's a South Korean film that someone gets killed. Someone gets killed with a paper cut.
It does sound like it would be in a Korean film if it was going to be in a film.
Can we discuss Cristiano's house where the murders occur? It's like a cross between a penthouse and the palm house.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I didn't really get what I was looking at when she came out of the floor thing. I thought it was like, because it has that really weird shot where it's from a distance, like up in the corner of the room and you're looking down and hair coming out, and it took me like 5 minutes to figure out where she was on the screen. I was looking at her going, where am I meant to be looking?
So
I thought it was like a shopping mall or something, but I didn't get it, and it was like, oh, it's just someone's living room.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's the film was made in a suburb of Rome, wasn't it, that was built in the late 30s, early 40s by Mussolini, because the next World Trade Fair was going to take place in Rome, and so it was meant to be a showcase for that. Obviously, the war happened and it never happened, but all that fascistic architecture is still there.
Yeah,
and that's what they were using.
That's interesting.
And there's a glorious axe to the head murder.
That's a great. That's possibly my favourite murder of the whole film. It just comes out of nowhere, doesn't it?
And it's quite dramatic. We'll get to the twist later because I'm a bit confused how an injury occurs to someone else, and I'm a bit confused by how that came about. I don't really understand.
Yeah. Oh, let's go there now. So, spoiler alert. So, the twist in the film is that there are two murderers, and the first murderer is in fact Cristiano, the news anchor man, and then he gets an axe to the head, and then the killer is then Peter Neal, who's meant to be the hero, and he takes over where Cristiano left off. But yeah, so we see Cristiano get a chop axe to the head, and then Johnny runs away and finds Peter Neal in the bushes
with his rock on, he's been bashed on the head.
So do we think he faked it?
Yeah, he's just a rock, hasn't he?
Yeah.
That takes some going to like whack, to be brave enough to whack the back of your head. I know he's just killed someone, but I still didn't think I could. I find it more comfortable shove an axe in someone's head and whack on my own head. Yeah,
no.
Maybe not.
But, oh, another spoiler, he does fake his own death.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
Again. Yeah, he does, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Maybe he didn't actually, maybe it wasn't a genuine.
Yeah,
maybe it wasn't a genuine wound.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't realise that at the time, sense, but that, I've only just thought that now. Maybe it's,
yeah,
it's a fake wound.
He does react very quickly to, like, discovering, oh, this is the guy's the murderer, now I'm going to kill him, and I'm going to take over his murder to cover up my own murdering betrayal, which I've been doing since I was a kid.
Yeah, well, yeah. I got that it was kind of, he was working with him, because the point is, he wants to hide the murder so he can't be implicated. So, what I got from it was Peter Neal spoke to this guy first and said, you do a few murders before I get there. Because the first one happens while he's still on the plane. So if he's not even in the country, he can't be implicated in the murder.
Yeah.
So he has Cristiano commit a few murders while he's there.
Yeah.
And then it was his, you know, it's because he wants to kill his ex, isn't it?
His ex-wife.
He wants to kill his ex and her new boyfriend.
Jane, who's fabulous.
Yeah.
He just seems to be stalking him, but like having an affair at the same time, so I don't get why she keeps driving past. I'm having a secret affair, but I'm just going to keep showing up outside your house to give it away.
Well, she's fucked up, isn't she?
She's a strange character.
Really interesting character as well, though, I think. And she's got more, because I think, was Daria Nicolodi supposed to play that character or wanted to play that character?
I'm not sure.
But she was sort of given the role of Anne the secretary, and I think she says in an interview that even though Jane, the ex-wife, is on screen for less time, she's much more interesting than Anne the secretary, because Anne is quite a passive character compared to the character Daria Nicolodi played in Deep Red.
Well, there's a little like reference that I thought where, what is it something like his pants, Peter Neal's pants are ironed or something, and then Daria Nicolodi is like, oh, I'll do them for you, it's all right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of it's referencing the Mark Daly in Deep Red, and
that
same kind of I'll do it for you.
Yeah. But she's the character. I mean, it could be what you said before about it being on purpose.
Oh, it's the pillows. He wants feather pillows, so it's like, it's all right, I'll go out and get the feather pillows for you.
Yeah. She says it underneath the breath, doesn't she?
Yeah.
What time did you wake up? 5 a.m.? Oh, you poor thing. And your pillow's too hard? I'll get you a feather pillow.
The pillows are too hard.
I'll get you a feather pillow. I meant to, forgot. I'm sorry.
It could be on purpose. It could be that she's been written that way because he wants all of the female characters to be passive and dull because that's what people have accused them of in the past. But it's a thing that was a bit of a shame. I thought she could have been a bit more interesting.
What would their relationship be like then? Was it what caused the...
Well, they were married.
They were married, weren't they? But I thought, didn't he like split up at one point?
It was going downhill because people make jokes, didn't they, about how when Daria Nicolodi appears in Deep Red, they were just getting together just got together, and so the character was really
prominent
and prominent. But then throughout their marriage, as their marriage failed, her roles in his films became worse and worse, to the point where in opera she has that famous scene where she in. He made opera in 87, I think it is, and she's looking through, there's a scene where she's looking through a keyhole and someone fires a gun through it, and you follow the bullet as it goes through her eye and back out the back of her head. So I think he just liked to kill, by the end, he was like killing her and all the films, just as like a marriage counselling.
She was there's definitely a sense of her being sidelined in this film, because
she
is on screen a lot, she is a completely empty, dull character. She's more dull than the landlord's daughter.
Yeah.
Who's sort of a bit sweet and insipid.
Yeah.
But is almost more interesting than the secretary.
Mm. Well, she's useful. She can fix a boiler.
Yeah.
She can fix a
boiler. The landlord's daughter. I love the fact that the landlord sends his newborn daughter around to do all the housework, the maintenance on the house.
And doesn't she say to him, don't get any ideas?
Yeah.
And Peter Neal's just like, this kid's about 15.
Oh, he calls a jailbait.
Yeah.
He says, Dad, it's jailbait.
A little bit creepy.
A little bit.
Although, when she goes, she meets up with Johnny, I think, does her hair pants match his t-shirt? Or is it her skirt, man? It's like, they're going out on the clothes match. I'm like, that's creepy.
Yeah. I love the bit where they reveal the affair between John Saxon and Jane, the ex-wife.
Yes.
And she says, I feel so
sleazy.
It's the way she slinks out of the cupboard with the glasses on, just into the camera, and she slinks away into the room all dramatically. Yeah. I thought she was just really hungover.
Is that how you walked around?
That's what I was doing. That was literally me this morning when I woke up coming into the living room.
he's got a secret sex cupboard in his office, hasn't he, that he comes out of.
It's okay, darling. It's okay.
I feel so sleazy.
I want to be in this secret sex cupboard. Maybe not now, but back then. she does look like Nigella Lawson. So I was wrong. I said the axe to the head was my favourite death scene, but my favourite death scene in this film is Jane's death. That's like an iconic scene, isn't it? When her arm gets chopped off and she just sprays.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
Yeah, I think by this point the effects technology had got a lot better, so you could do proper gory deaths.
So I did sort of sit there thinking, well, at the times he's being accused of being misogynist and chauvinist, and I've always thought it's undeserved. But I thought in this film,
I think
it is, but then if it is on purpose, then
I think I genuinely think that's him taking the piss out of it.
Yeah.
You're right.
I think because the film itself is meta, and then I think that was meta for his own career. And if you think about it, it's all about the writer getting criticised for being younger, like he was getting criticised. It makes sense as a parallel.
And there's always a nod that Peter Neal is Dario Argento, that the accusation is his novels are sexist, and they're advertised actually as giallo novels, aren't they? So there's sort of an implication there that they are they corrupt people.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore he must be corrupt, and it's almost there's something there around with Peter Neal becoming the killer. It's almost Dario Argento saying, well, almost a wink saying, what if I am? What if I'm a killer? What if I am what you say I am? Ultimately the most corrupt person you can think of.
It's just a fine line, isn't it? If he's got all of these things going around in his head. I often think that writing and stuff, I always think some of the stuff I can come up with on the page, if I wasn't a writer, would I be a serial killer?
I like how there's a Sherlock Holmes reference in this,
but
that's complete enough that they say, oh, in a Conan Doyle book, and I'm like, nobody says in a Conan Doyle book, they just say in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I was like, just because you're a writer, you don't need to make a point that you know who wrote it, because everybody does anyway.
Might not have been allowed to say the words.
Maybe that's like a copyright. He's a character, isn't he? So maybe that's just say.
It's got to be one of the most overused quotes in the world, though.
I think that's kind of self-referential, because it's like the giallos in general were based on all these early pulp novels, where all the actual giallo novels were things like Conan Doyle, Agatha Christie, Edgar Wallace. So he's referencing what it's based on. I think the whole film itself is just referencing the whole genre.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at it with enough time has passed since the golden age of it.
Yeah.
To take all the best bits of giallo and stick them together.
Yeah.
And reference itself, and it's just a great film.
What I was quite amazed about is, the shoes that are from the very beginning that carry on through how many years later is this final thing? There's not one speck of dust or scuff.
No.
Or anything, they're in perfect condition. He looked after those shoes.
There's not even a tooth mark on them.
He's got loads of pairs behind them.
Speaking of quotes, there's a quote from Argento when he was talking about violence towards women. And I find this really interesting. He says, I like women, especially beautiful ones. If they have a good face and figure, I would much prefer to watch them being murdered than an ugly girl or a man.
It's a bit like Donald Trump.
I certainly don't.
Really is.
I certainly don't have to justify myself to anyone about this. I don't care what anybody thinks or reads into it. I've often had journalists walk out of interviews when I say what I feel about this subject.
You say you're definitely a bit sexist, I don't think, but you
make
your films.
I also think there's part of me that thinks it's patronising to women when people say, that these films are chauvinistic and misogynist, because I don't know, it's like they just assume that the women involved in these films are these poor little damsels who have no idea what they're doing. You know, and didn't have the
I'm getting paid a lot of money to be doing this.
Yeah,
Yeah, they didn't make those choices to be in the film, you know. Yeah. It's a fine line.
And I think if I was going to be in a horror film, I'd want to get killed off anyway. So, yeah. And I wouldn't mind the classic, dramatic, one tit out of death. That'd be my choice.
A one tit death, one tit out of death.
Yeah.
I think probably Dario Argento's attitude to him is probably a little bit complicated, isn't it? It's like he's obviously there not taking any shit from journalists, which I think actually in some ways is laudable. Why should he adapt what he wants to do in the face of journalistic criticism or whatever? He needs to he needs to have some integrity in terms of what he does, but actually I think he's just not apologising, is he? And I think it's not wholesale sexism, actually, all the way. And it's a film industry. They don't exactly employ necessarily ugly men all the time either, do they? You know, or if they do, there's a particular point to it, or
it's playing a tramp or a homeless person
or it's very simplistic, really. I think, isn't it, to sort of to lay that at his feet, and he's Italian, so there's that. Cultural influence as well.
Yeah, definitely. And funny enough, Peter Neal was supposed to be played by Christopher Walken as well.
Yeah.
Which I think would have been interesting.
I read that and I think he was persuaded not to because he thought actually it'd be more obvious. If he played Peter Neal, it would be more obvious from the beginning that he was already a killer.
Yeah. That's very true.
But Faust suicides in this is actually really quite gruesome as hell.
It's great.
It's like great effectively. He just spins around and like it's really vicious and visceral kind of imaging. And it's almost a shame that it was faked because it would have been really fucking dramatic if he'd just done it like that. And that was just brutal ending.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's setting up that he's mad, but then you think he's not mad because he's planned it all out. So he's acting as if he's mad, but he's actually quite clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says, you've got insane. You're just a madman. And I was like, no, he's not. He's very methodical and thought out what he's doing. It's a very well-planned attack that he's doing.
Yeah. And when they reveal that it's fake and he stands behind the cop, you can just see his ears behind the cop.
That's amazing.
That's incredible.
The way he bends down and he still stands it was so well done. It's probably the best I've ever seen.
If you've seen it a few times, you can kind of see his ears poking out a tiny bit, but the first time you see it, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. And so the film ends with the longest scream.
Mm. Oh my God.
Although he is Peter Neal. Tells me to send lots of piece of modern art. He's killed by some modern artists.
That's very true. That is very true.
It was literally the longest, most dramatic scream ever. Like, I am impressed by that girl's set of lungs.
Well, that's all. We watched the interview, didn't we, on the DVD at the end of it, and I think it was almost like her revenge on Dario Argento at the end, where she wasn't meant to do a very long scream. I think, the experience has been so boring for her, she decides to just make the most of that moment.
Yeah. Because I think they filmed a lot of it in sequence as well, because that last scene in the film was her last scene to shoot. So I think she'd been shooting dull scenes, but the character had been dull in those scenes all the way through, so she finally got to let loose in that last bit, didn't she?
And she says in that interview, doesn't she say, do you think I damaged my throat? No, I didn't, because I'm an actress and I know how to
use my diaphragm. yeah. I want to meet Daria Nicolodi. We should do a podcast with her. We'll try.
Incredible.
Daria, if you're interested, love, pop over to Liverpool. I'll put you up in the spare room. So yeah, I mean, we're sort of working our way through Jello at the moment, and I think this is a really good one. It's
It is, like, after the glory days, isn't it? It's when Jallo was sort of starting to die off and it was being replaced by the slasher genre, really. So it's a mix of the two.
I've heard some critics don't even really consider it a Jallo. They call it, like, a neo-Jallo or they just don't think it's that at all. It's more referencing, you know what I mean?
It was very Jallo. It was
wasn't
a reference. It was, like, quintessentially Jallo. A couple of years later.
It's almost like... It's a bit like... Wes Craven making Scream, isn't it? It's people see that as a sort of it's not just a slasher movie. It's harking back.
Almost like a parody, not a parody,
not a parody, like a homage to his own genre.
Well, that's what this is a bit like, really.
So Tenebrae, 1982, and so we're big fans. What's your favourite Jallo? We'd love you to get in touch and tweet us and let us know what Jallo films you'd like us to talk about. We've got that big, lovely list from Rachel Nisbet that we'll be working our way through as well. Plenty more to get our teeth into. But if you'd like to give us any suggestions on the types of Jallo you'd like to hear us discuss, then tweet me at Johnny Larkin or email us at screamingqueens@gmail.com. And thanks for listening. And we'll be... We're really, really, really hungry. Sorry. Oh, God. We're all going to bed now to do a big, holy spoon. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.